Jake Plummer joins us on Sports Byline. Quarterback who played 10 NFL seasons, and he was drafted in the second round out of Arizona State by the Cardinals. That's the Arizona Cardinals, of course, and also played for the Broncos in Tampa Bay. And Jake and his two older brothers spent much of their youth at the family lumber mill and warehouse in Smiley Creek, a town of 50. Did they have a stoplight in Smiley Creek, Jake?
Oh, no, no stoplights at all, man. Just a nice little creek to play in, and we could be run with nature out there as a little kid. It was awesome.
What did that do as far as developing you as a person? I mean, the work ethic and the family input and everything. What was that in molding you?
Well, you know, for me, I was young. You know, my dad, you say a lumber mill. There was no lumber mill up there, but my dad was a lumber broker, and he had had enough of being in the, you know, corporate sales and pushing it, so he sold everything. We left Boise and moved on up to a little town called Smiley Creek, right close to Stanley, Idaho, where my mom actually taught first through sixth grade. So I was left at home with my dad as a little four-year-old up in the mountains with just freedom to run, to play, to go down to the creek, to learn what it's like to cross a creek without getting your feet wet. So part of my surviving all those years of play, and I attribute to the skills I developed as a youngster hopping across rocks in that creek, Smiley Creek. So great fun for a youngster, a great place to be free and kind of get, you know, the appreciation of nature.
You in high school were a three-sport star, football, baseball, and basketball. Did you ever think about gravitating to baseball and basketball rather than football?
You know, basketball was my favorite, but I saw that my options were limited. It was something I didn't spend, you know, countless hours working on, but it was just something I really loved to do. And being a natural leader and kind of have the ability to motivate my teammates, I could do okay out there. But I was all hustle and grit when it came to basketball. And same with baseball. I loved to play it. My summers were full of a lot of things, backpacking in the Sawtooths and playing ball down at the beach here in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, where my dad lived. And I didn't really sit and focus on any one of those sports at all, except, you know, all of them, really. We played all the time, me and my brothers. And the real feeling about football, you know, came, you know, with the ability and the belief that I could possibly make it, maybe get a scholarship, which was really nice to think about for my parents, a free education. That came to be, you know, right about my junior year, I realized, wow, I could possibly go to college and take this check off my parents', you know, desktop of paying for my college. And that's when football really became something I knew was at least an avenue to get an education and go to college. So other than that, man, it was hard to give up basketball and baseball. I kept playing a lot of hoops when I was at ASU, and I've always played handball, one of the greatest sports out there for, you know, training for other sports. I think it's a great way to hone your hand-eye coordination, mental and physical toughness, and lateral movement and all. But pretty active family with two older brothers. And whether that was by choice or them forcing me to, I was glad in the long run they kept me moving always.
How did you end up at Arizona State? Why there?
I was recruited pretty heavily, you know, after I went to the Stanford quarterback receiver camp, where Bill Walsh and Terry Shea, two, you know, amazing coaches, were running that. And I really wanted to play for Stanford. You know, I did pretty well there. I set a foot speed record in the camp, and I kind of stood out, you know, being a small kid from Boise, Idaho, throwing the ball next to these big guns from Cali and whatnot. And that's when the word kind of spread, and my coach, Coach Steve Vogel, who I give tons of credit to, you know, he dubbed all those VCR tapes back in the day. We didn't have a huddle. You know, he was dubbing VCR tapes and sending them out to every college that asked for information on me. And that kind of got the word out. And ASU was really the first team from day they could call you in the summer that called, offered me a full ride scholarship. And then as the process and recruiting process went, all those other teams that I was interested in, like Colorado and Washington State and Washington and Iowa, and, you know, the ones I'd narrowed it down to, he was the only coach that said that if I came to ASU, there he felt we had a shot to win a title legitimately. And I felt like, with that being said, I wanted to take him up on his word and see if he could make that happen or if I could go and be a part of that. And we almost did it, you know, in the long run. But a tough decision as an 18-year-old, but in hindsight, it was a great decision. I trusted my gut and my heart, and I made a decision to go where I felt I could play ball and have fun.
Quick question about Bill Walsh, because I was the play-by-play announcer at Stanford in the 2 years in which he was the head coach down there, and I just shook my head, and I always said this about him. He dictated the tempo of the game. He never reacted to what the other team was doing. But when I talked to him about quarterbacks after he had selected Joe Montana, I asked him, I said, what do you look for in quarterbacks? And he said two things. One, the footwork to get back in the pocket, and two, their head, how quickly they swiveled across the field looking for primary, secondary, and a third-dairy receiver. What did you learn and see from him in the time you were exposed to him in the camp?
I learned just one of the most couple of real valuable things that I can recall right off the top of my head. I mean, other than being at his camp and the impact that put on me as a young kid and the confidence it gave me, you know, knowing like, hey, I'm from Boise, Idaho, and they're not known for big-time athletes. I was able to go down there, compete, and hang with those big-time athletes. So it gave me a ton of confidence just to be in his presence and at his camp. But a couple things he taught us in the classroom that stood out in my career and something I was focused on afterwards was, one, was on the run when you're throwing and you're rolling out and you're about to make that throw, to just let a deep breath go out. Just let the air out and relax when you throw it. That way you're not grunting and holding your breath, and then usually airmailing it if you're running and throwing on the run. So that was real valuable. And then the other real valuable piece that he taught me was, when you're dropping back as a quarterback, you never look at your receivers. You look at the defenders, because you know where your receivers are going because the diagram of the play. But you don't have to look to see if your receiver's running a 12-yard hook route and coming back to you. You know he's going to be there. It's seeing the defenders is the key. And that was so valuable as a young kid to learn, like, okay, now I know where my eyes need to go and then know where I'm going when I throw the ball. And it really helped with anticipation and trust in your teammates and just being able to use your eyes as a quarterback, which is, like he said, you know, going across that field when you can use your eyes, you know, you can do some really good things. So all in all, an amazingly huge experience and an amazing, you know, confidence boost for this young kid when I was getting ready to go into my senior year at Capital High School.
You mentioned about leadership. You've always been very comfortable with it. And I would like to put the label of fearless on it, because you were the starting quarterback during the course of your freshman year, and you didn't even blink about taking on that responsibility as young as you were.
Not really. You know, I went there for one thing, and that was to play ball. So, you know, when the opportunity came to get out there, I was the backup to the starter. And when he got injured, I went out there. And I actually got injured right after I went out against Oregon State. I can't even remember what time of the game it was, but I sprained my ankle. And then that next game at Washington State, they threw me in at halftime because we were struggling. And I had a severely sprained right ankle and spatted up and looked horrible, but I went out there and, you know, when it came time to go out and play, I was always one that, you know, there was no switch that I needed to flip. You know, when I practiced, when I played pickup ball, when I played ping pong, when I was playing hacky sack, whatever it was, I was competing to try my best, to do my best. And if it was the team sport, I was playing as hard as I could and trying to get the other guys around me to get better and step up. So, you know, when it came to leadership, I was just myself. And that's why I tell young kids now, just be yourself. If you're faking and you're trying to rah-rah and you turn it on only when the coach is around, everybody sees that. So go hard always. Go out there. Be fearless. And the other guys will respond if they're paying attention.
We only have a little over a minute before we have to break here. But the key game, I think, in your career, and you probably agree, was when you took on Nebraska. You shut them out 19-0 to stop their 26-game winning streak. What was it that Arizona State took into that game that allowed them to be so dominant over Nebraska?
Well, you know, that year prior, we went down to Lincoln and got our tails whooped. They beat us, I don't even know, 75-28. They didn't punt once. We never stopped them. So, you know, for me, I was pumping it because we put up 28 points on them, and they had a really good defense. So I knew, hey, offensively, we could hang with these guys. But the addition of Derek Rogers and a couple other key guys to our defense and the maturity of it, that was really the key. We went into that game you know, mad because there was a sea of red going to the stadium. No one really believed we could do it. We all knew we had a shot because we trusted each other and we built a real strong core during the summer workouts and a real love and care for each other that was special. And that game, you know, we loved it, man. We gave new meaning to the N's on the helmets. You know, 19 to nothing is what they stand for when I see that helmet now. So great win for ASU and for our program. It vaulted us right into the national scene and put me on the Heisman watch, you know, as a representative of that team that people focused on. But, man, what a great season. And that win was definitely one of the biggest ones of my career.
We're talking football with Jake Plummer. And when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about his lifelong friendship with Pat Tillman, not only at Arizona State, but also in the National Football League when he was the quarterback with the Arizona Cardinals. And Pat Tillman was a linebacker on that team. We continue across the country and around the world. We've got you on Sports Byline. Jake Plummer has joined us on Sports Byline. Of course, he played quarterback in the NFL for 10 seasons, drafted in the second round out of Arizona State by the Arizona Cardinals, also played with the Broncos and Tampa Bay. You were taken, as I mentioned, in the second round, and one of your teammates who was a teammate with you at Arizona State was Pat Tillman. Tell me a little bit about the first time you ever met him.
I remember meeting Pat when he came in on his recruiting trip, and I immediately liked him because he, you know, long hair. He said dude about every other word. And he wasn't dressed up. He was wearing some just like he just picked up some clothes off his floor and came on the trip. So for him, I knew he wasn't coming down there to impress anybody. He was coming down there to see what was going on and if it was worthwhile for him to come become a Sun Devil. And I immediately loved him because, you know, a smaller guy, you know, supposedly not as fast, not fast enough to play his position, and all of the things they stack against you when you're not a five-star, four-star recruit, you know. But Pat was awesome, and from the minute he came in and got into the program, he was influential, and immediately, you know, we were pretty close because of, like I said, a couple of undersized kids that weren't supposed to be there, but now we're here, and we're making a difference, and we're setting the tone out there for that squad, and I cherished all the time I got to spend with that guy. He was an amazing, amazing human being.
One of the commonalities that I saw during the course of his playing career, both at ASU and in the National Football League, and also watching you in both locations, was that you both walked to the beat of your own drum. And I always thought that was a strength because I think, you know, usually in society, certainly in sports like football, certainly in the a National Football League, there's a structure that they want all players to fit into. How did you both make that happen so you could be true to yourselves?
Well, I think you have to go back to just how I know how I was raised. You know, he was raised in a family, oddly enough, with three boys, a very loving mother and father who, you know, taught them to think for themselves or be thought for, you know, like make sure you have a head on your shoulders and know what's going on. And same with my mom and dad, you know, they really taught me to just be myself. My brothers too were influential in that, like not letting me be too big headed or think I was bigger than anybody else, and made sure that I treated people right. And, you know, all in all, that's really what it was about. I think we've made Pat into, you know, the national hero that he's become for what he did to give up the dream of playing and making lots of money to fight for our country. But there's a lot of people out there in the world that just treat people right. And that was really the best attribute of Pat, is that he treated people with respect. He treated people how he wanted to be treated. And, you know, if that makes him the most special person in the world, then there's a lot of them out there also. And I tell people that a lot. You know, Pat was definitely a unique individual, but there's a lot of people out there with high qualities and high standards, and that's really what Pat was about. And I know if he could, he would thank his mom and dad and his brothers and his family for helping mold him into the individual he was.
I will tell you something I'll never forget, and I still smile or even laugh to this day, was when you gave the eulogy for him, and you were in a suit and flip-flops in honor of him.
Well, you know, he hated getting dressed up.
Yep.
He didn't want to wear any type of suits or anything like that. And on the plains in Arizona, he'd wear his high-tech hiking boots and a pair of cargo pants that I think got washed with a pink sweater or something of Marie's. And, you know, he didn't want to get dressed up, man. for him, it was, hey, I'm coming here to play ball. I don't need to look pretty and wear $100,000 watches to show everybody I deserve to be here. He was just all about what you see is what you got. And, you know, he was really a remarkable person, and he influenced my life tremendously. I got to spend a lot of time with him. But, you know, I hope someday someone will go around ASU's campus and all around Tempe and just ask people if they ever bumped into Pat. And not just bumped into him like, hey, how you doing as he walked by. But I guarantee you, a lot of people out there were positively influenced by that guy at a coffee shop or the grocery store or wherever, because he really was one of a kind. And I miss him every day. And I, you know, I'm sad that he's gone. But, you know, if anything is left from him, and the memory I have of him is just being inspired to don't be dull. Try to be as genuine as you can and just always take life and as a challenge and try to make yourself better.
You moved into the National Football League and you started at quarterback your first year. In the seventh game, you led the Cardinals on a 98-yard drive, capping it with a 31-yard go-ahead touchdown, and you led the Cardinals to three of their four victories that season. What did you expect the NFL to be like, and how was it similar to or different from what you thought?
Well, I got a pretty quick introduction there to the NFL, and the first interception I threw in the preseason, you know, trying to chase the ball down and having these big dudes really trying to kill you and hurt you bad. So I learned right away, like, hey, you're a quarterback, and in the NFL, if you throw a pick, you better play deep safety because these big guys want to hurt you when they get the chance. And I tried to be doing some tough stuff, and I learned right away to back off, let those big guys go. You know, especially the big guys. I remember, you know, when one time making a guy miss in the preseason and thinking, oh, I got time to hitch up and maybe throw the ball a little further. And by the time I hitched up to look to my next guy, the guy that I made miss had jumped up and stripped the ball out of my hands because they're hungry in the NFL. You know, they know they could be cut and there goes that ticket to feed their family or take care of their kids or whatever it is. So it's different. It's different in college, you know, the intensity and the ability levels of all those players was the cream of the crop only makes it in the NFL. So I learned, you know, those balls that you overthrow in college that maybe you missed the target on and hit the ground and they're incomplete, those balls were coming back at you in the NFL. There was none of that. They were getting intercepted and returned right back at you. So quick learning curve, but then all in all, it was just football. You just had to pick up your pace a little bit, be crisp, and really become a student of the game. And I was really lucky to be coached by some amazing coaches. You know, one of my favorites was Jeep Crisp, who's still coaching in the league, and Mark Trestman really taught me a lot about the footwork involved and coming out of that West Coast style and back to the Bill Walsh combo we had earlier of just using your feet and timing of your feet and trusting your receivers. And he took it to a next level for me as far as playing quarterback, and I was lucky to be coached by some amazing coaches.
You know as well as I do that the NFL was kind of system football in a sense. You had a reputation as a risk-taking gunslinger type of quarterback, and I'm just wondering, did you bristle at that type of label put on you?
Not at all. You know, I think that it was hard for some people to understand, mainly the media. You know, they wanted to see someone that was, you know, I don't know. I guess they wanted someone that was your typical guy that would stand in there and throw it away out of bounds five times in a row and then be fine with punting all game long in hopes to maybe win a game. But for me, I say it all the time. I think my greatest, you know, my most positive, greatest attribute was that I believed every single play could and should work. But it was also probably one of my biggest, you know, knock on me was that I tried to make every play work sometimes to my own and the team's demise by just believing in myself and saying, hey, the coach called this, let's make this work. So I learned as I got older in the league, you know, to take your shots and when to throw it away, when not to. But, yeah, I was out there for who knows how long. I didn't know if I'd play 3 years or one or even 10. So I was making sure to go out there and sling it and have fun. And I probably made, you know, how many bad decisions? 161, where I threw 161 TDs, so I'm even. You know, I went in and out of the league, came out even with TD to interception ratio, so no one could say anything about that.
In 2003, you signed as a free agent with the Denver Broncos. I'll let you characterize the relationship between Jake Plummer and Mike Shanahan.
You know, it was a great relationship, really. People make it out to be one that went south and was sour, and it really wasn't. It just as a veteran that took the team in 2005 to the AFC Championship game. You know, I felt like we had the makings of something really special. And in my heart, I was ready to retire after that Super Bowl had we made it to the Super Bowl and won. I really played the NFL for one reason, and that was to try to win a Super Bowl. I wasn't trying to win six or seven like Mr. Brady. I just wanted one. When that time didn't come and we lost in 2005, I thought I'd come back for one more year. We got the makings of an amazing team. And then we drafted a quarterback. So I didn't know why. I felt if we'd have drafted a couple key positions, maybe we could have got better as a team. And that's kind of not where it started. But I was a vet. I felt like I took care of business. My teammates knew that. I was there when I needed to be. And if it was time to be away, I was getting away. So my mind was right. And he encouraged that. So in the end, we fell off a little bit because, you know, I didn't have the buffer of Kubiak there. And Kubiak really was a guy who could take what Shanahan wanted to do, whittle it down so that it would fit into what I was capable of doing comfortably on Sundays. And when he left in 2005 and 2006, he wasn't there. That's when there was a little bit of a fallout. And in the end, you know, the fallout was real because I got benched and I didn't have kind words to say. And in the long run, you know, obviously as you grow older, you realize, hey, sometimes it's best just to shut up and not say anything. You know, I don't regret that. I buried the hatchet with him. We've had numerous conversations and talked and been in touch with each other since. So people think we have all this hatred and everything, but how could I hate a guy who gave me a chance to really showcase what I could do on the grand scale of being a Denver Bronco, one of the greatest organizations in all of sports, and really, you know, show that, hey, we almost made it. I wish we would have, but we didn't. And so I tip my hat to Shanahan and his mad scientist ways of creating ways to find mismatches and put me in position to really succeed and prove to the NFL that, hey, I was you know, a legitimate quarterback and have the abilities to take a team almost all the way.
We only have 3 minutes left, and I want to touch on a couple of other things briefly. On March 9th, 2007, you announced your retirement. And since retirement, you are the only athlete that I've ever met that went into playing four-wall handball. What is the appeal of that for you?
Well, I watched my dad playing when I was a kid. I watched my brothers. As soon as I was able, I was trying to hit that ball, and I was a mess. You know, as a competitive kid, that's one of the hardest games you'll ever play. I mean, like golf. Golf is so hard. When you're competitive, golf is a hard game to play because you think, you know, that ball should go in that damn hole, you know. But handball's the same way. It's just a mentally tough, physically tough game. I love it. I think, you know, the only way I can tell people somewhat so that they can relate to how I feel playing handball is if they have a dog and they ever take their dog to the dog park and that dog just starts flying around, his ears are back, and he's in the, like, you can just see joy on his face. That's me in a handball court. It's just the best time I could ever imagine to chase that ball around. You know, two-on-two doubles is one of the funnest games I've ever played in my life. It's an old school kind of gladiator-esque type game, and I love it. It did a lot for my skill set, my spatial awareness, my lateral movement, and my hand-eye coordination and reflexes. You know, it's just a great, great game, and I try to encourage a lot of kids to play it. You know, this age of specialization, you know, kids need to find something else to enhance their skill set. And I tell you, if you are looking for something, even just a racquetball and a wall and a buddy, and you can go out there and you will get better as an athlete in whatever sport you're in if you give it a shot.
We only have a minute left, and I know that's not enough time, but today you're involved with Ready List Sports, a product that digitizes football playbooks and make them interactive. Briefly tell me about that.
Yeah, you hit it. It digitizes them. It makes them interactive and utilizes multiple learning styles. And then on the back end, you know, coaches usually have to find out what their players know by walkthroughs or practice or making their own tests and giving it to the kids and grading it. You know, our software does that all for you. It's auto-generated tests on the back end of your playbook. The kids can study, take the test, all those results go to the coach, so he knows who took the test, where they stand, what they need to work on. It's the future of playbooks. We've had a lot of success so far down in Texas. We're signing up some NFL teams, and we're chipping away, trying to change the way these coaches, go about installing their playbooks and that sort of thing. But it's been fun. I'm a tech entrepreneur with no tech background or business, business major. But playing quarterback, I tell you what, it teaches you how to manage guys and how to, work well with others. And my connections in the football atmosphere, the football realm, they're all over the place. So Ready List Sports, that's what I'm up to. It's going to be big, and I only say that because when I put my mind to something, it usually happens. So it's been a lot of fun, and thanks for asking about that.
Well, listen, I want you to come back again because I want to touch base with you about your support of medical marijuana. I agree with it, especially with the football injuries and everything. Jake, take care, and we'll be looking to talking to you on another for Sports Byline USA.
Hey, it's been a pleasure. Thank you. You have a great day.
Jake Plummer with us. We continue on America's Sports Talk Show.